Thanks very much. That was a lovely welcome. Now, I'm so pleased to have been asked to be on That Reminds Me, because it's given me an opportunity to give you little bits of my very long life. Now, I'm saying a very long life because people keep rushing up to me in the street with bits of paper or bus tickets and saying, "Will you please sign this while you're still here?" And to prove that point, I've brought a little carry-on card with me here, and I'll read out the cast. And it's Sydney James, Hattie Jakes, Kenneth Connor, Charles Hawtrey, Esma Cannon, Bill Owen, and Liz Fraser. Well, I'm the only one left. I've actually been in 4 carry-on films. That was from the cast of Carry On Cabbie, and I'm going to talk to you about the carry-on films later. I was born near the Elephant and Castle many years ago. Now, I've never disclosed my correct age. People may guess, but I always deny it. So people have to work out how old I am by what I can remember, like before the First World War and things like that. I was brought up, my mother had a little grocery shop near the Elephant and Castle, and she sold everything, and I mean everything. There was bundles of wood, all the groceries. She sold eggs one at a time. I hope this doesn't give my age away. Woodbines one at a time, and she was fantastic and supported me completely when I decided that I wanted to go on the stage. Well, I won a scholarship to a drama school, and I was there for 2 years, and then I advertised in the stage saying, "Brilliant young student wants to work in rep." And I got 3 replies. 2 asked me for money, and the 3rd one was from Accrington. And I went to Accrington rep, and I got £4.10 a week, and I was ASM and had a really good training. Now, I did a lot of touring. Just remembering some of them, I did Hot Water, and that was with Ronnie Barker. And years and years later, I met him, and I said, "Gosh, can you remember that when we were touring? And what did we get? £4 a week, can you imagine?" And he said, "Well, I got 6. And I never forgave him for that. One of my favourite people that I've worked in many films with and quite a few tours with was Irene Handel. What a lovely lady and a great friend of mine. And this particular play, it was by Bill Kenwright, who you football fans might know. He now owns Everton. But in those days, he wasn't so rich, and he used to do tat. And this play was all about an outside lav, and it was called One of the Family. Now, if you can imagine a whole play about an outside lav. And the whole thing was that we, the family, wanted to have an indoor lav, and she refused. On this particular week, we were at Salford, and it was very, very sad because Sid James, who was playing at the Sunderland Theatre, died on stage. And I had known Sid for many years, and so had Irene, and it distressed us both. And I said to Irene, who by that time was, I think, nearly 80, I said, you ought to take note of what's happened to Sid, because you are working too hard. You are doing this play. You've got a pilot coming up for a television series. You're writing a book. You're doing all these radio interviews. You ought to just play it down a bit and take care of yourself." "Oh, I'm all right," she said, "I'm all right." And about 2 days later, so we're still at Salford, and it's still only a couple of days after Sid had died. And what happened, Stephen Lewis was in this play and also Sue Pollard. And at the beginning, when the curtain goes up, I meet Stephen Lewis in the middle of the stage and I straighten his tie, and then Irene Handel has to come on clutching a hot water bottle and shouts, "Ethel!" on her way to the outside lav. So the curtain starts to swish up and Irene suddenly goes, clutches herself and says, "Oh, Liz, oh my God, Liz, oh, Liz," and collapses on the floor. And the curtain is up, and I think, "Oh, my God, she's had a heart attack." So I go on the stage, and I'm straightening Stephen Lewis's tie, and I said, "Irene has collapsed in the wings. I think she's had a heart attack." And Stephen Lewis goes, "Oh," as he always does. And immediately there's Ethel, And on she comes, clutching this hot water bottle, making her way to the outside lab and winking at me. Irene was the most awful or good practical joker that I've ever met. And in this same play, right at the end, with this all asking for three acts, Bill Kenwright's play, can we please have an inside lab? She says, all right then, I'll sign the papers, where's the pen? And just before the end is coming up, I look on the table. We had a terrible assistant stage manager. I mean, we'd make tea without a teapot on the stage and throw out the water from a vase and make it in that. But at this time, I look on the table and there is no pen. And I thought, oh, I've got to get off stage, get a pen and come back on again. And so I get up and I see Irene sort of eyeing me as I walked. And I decided not to go to the lav, but to go to the outside door where I knew the prop table was. So I get to the prop table outside and I say to the ASM, there's no pen on the stage, there's no pen on the stage. And she goes, oh dear, oh. So I grabbed an eyebrow pencil, which was on the makeup part, and I tucked it in my sleeve. And I open the door and I go back in again and Irene's still sort of looking at me. And it comes to the last lines in the play and she says, oh, all right, I'll sign it. Where's the pen? Here you are, Gran, I say, and she says, I'm not signing it with that. That's an eyebrow pencil. So I think I hit her and then said, sign it. The other thing she used to do, which was quite funny, we had a lot of scenes together and we used to be peeling these vegetables and we toured for many towns, but she would always go and get some obscene potato or a terrifying carrot for me to peel. By the way, during all these tours, I was also busy in television. Rediffusion had started then, which was the independent television. And all the things to start with were live. I don't know if you remember, but in those days you'd have a 15-minute commercial, but they went out live. And I was asked to do, and this is very early on again in my, this is in the 50s, I was about 10, I think. And I was asked to do this one where the location was at the seaside and they were advertising three things. I've never forgotten this. One was Bartok sunglasses. There was Janet Dickinson swimsuits and the commentary was by Miss England. And then there was Starhouse foil. It was just being introduced, this foil, you know, that we now get so used to. You forget that there was ever a time when it started. And we had rehearsed this, another actress and myself, and we would come on and sit on a sand dune and she would open up the hamper and she would then be taking out the sandwiches wrapped and I would ask her what it was all about and she would tell me how you could do it and what you would do everything in and finish up telling me the price. And the director said, look, Miss England can't talk very well. Will you please do the commentary for Janet Dickinson's swimsuit? So with my heart beating away, I did that. I mean, I was reading it or something, introducing it as you do as they all walked across. And now we get to my bit with this actress. And we sit on the beach and she opens up this hamper and takes out this sandwich, which is wrapped up in this foil. And I said, gosh, that's good. What's that? Nothing. So I look at her eyes and I think, oh, goodness, she's dried. So I thought, just carry on, carry on. So I said, is that new foil that I've heard about? Nothing. Oh, I should think that's great. What is it? You've wrapped up the sandwiches? Oh, that must keep the sandwiches really fresh. What a great idea. I bet you could cook a chicken in that as well. Well, you could probably, you wrap it up, you put the chicken in the oven. And fish, I've heard that fish is very good if you do it in the oven. And this went on. And right at the end, I was just getting to the last hurdle and I found myself saying, and now you're going to tell me how much it is. Well, it's 1 and 11 for the small size and it's 2 and 11 for the large. And the director came down and he kissed and kissed me and he said, I will use you in as many shows as I possibly can. And he did. I did No Hiding Place and it really started me off, if you know what I mean. But what a terrible experience. Also live in those days, I was matron in Wacko with Jimmy Edwards, and we used to do this at the Shepherd's Bush Empire. and Jimmy would be just Jimmy, and I was, again, very, very young, and I'd come on as the matron in charge of all the children, and he often would give me the wrong cue, and I'd go charging on the stage, and he'd say, "Back, matron, back, you're on too early," and he always made, if he made a mistake, he always made it sound as if it was my mistake. Now, I've made 54 films in all, mainly in the 60s and the 70s. But my favourite is a film that lots of people haven't even heard of, and it was called Double Bunk. And this was with Sid James, Ian Carmichael, Jeanette Scott, Dennis Price. And as I've said, he was a great pal of mine, Sid. And I did a lot of Tony Hancock's with Sid James. And he used to call me Lizzle. And we were great mates, and he would take me home to his wife, Val, who was very lovely and who's had to put up with a lot of stick since her husband died, but never mind. Anyway, he was a terrific person. And there was one little funny thing, again live, all these live programmes on the Hancock, where Irene Handel goes up to Sid with a little chihuahua. Irene always had a chihuahua dog under her arm. I don't think any of them ever touched the ground. And they get very possessive, you know, if you always carry them. And Sid had to sort of put his hand out to Irene, and the dog bit it. And he said, "Oh, ferocious dog." Well, I was obviously with him on all the Carry On films, and I'll talk about those in a minute. My first film was I'm All Right, Jack, and that was at Shepperton Studios, and it was with a fantastic... What a way to start one's film career. It was with Peter Sellers, Richard Attenborough, Ian Carmichael, Margaret Rutherford, Irene Handel. It was just a wonderful, wonderful cast. And I'd just like to tell you how I got that film. I went to drama school, as I said, and they always have a show at the end of the 2 years... a drama show, and you have an adjudicator, and all the agents and that all come to discover you, or not. And this adjudicator was a very well-known casting director, and we all wanted to impress. And each of us did a dramatic piece and a comedy piece. And he then adjudicated us all afterwards, and he came to me and he said, "This student I have given the highest marks for drama." She was very touching, she cried, and she did it beautifully. And I thought, oh, gosh, that's marvellous. And his next line was, "Unfortunately, this student has no sense of comedy." Oh. And he gave me the lowest marks. But the repercussions of that was that there was this man there called Kenneth Seal, who was from Spotlight, which is our casting directory. And he came up to me and he said, "I disagreed completely with the adjudication. I thought your comedy was very good." And then it was something like a year later that they were looking for the girl to play in I'm All Right, Jack, and they'd been to all the agents, and I didn't have an agent at that time, just going around with my photos and everyone thinking I was rubbish. And Richard Attenborough said to the Bolting brothers, "Well, why don't you try Spotlight? There perhaps there's a girl out there who hasn't got an agent." So this is Richard telling John Bolting. So that's what they did. And because of that adjudication, the man from Spotlight, Kenny Seal, sent me along. And to cut that story short, I got that part. And it was a wonderful break and a beginning of my film career. There are lots of one-liners that I've had that people have remembered. The one that got me started with Tony Hancock was when it was in a dance hall, and I just had this one line, and Sid had been very successful in getting girls on the floor by just giving them a sort of a little kick and an indication. And so Hancock comes up to me and gives me a little kick, and I say, "No, you kicking your great lump." And Tony liked people to be very sort of aggressive, and I worked with him time after time. And another line was, of course, from I'm All Right, Jack, which people remind me of, and that was when I was in the bubble car and they play this sweet music in the back. And we've had a really sexy kiss, and we draw away from each other, and I say, "Stan," and he says, "Yes." I say, "Can I ask you something?" "Yes." "Are them your own teeth?" And people remembered that line. And then there was another film, and this was with John Mills, called The Family Way. And I saw him only a couple of days ago, 95. obviously slowed down, but as lucid as ever. Anyway, it was a film with John Mills, and I was with Barry Foster, who played my husband, and a little bit inadequate, it seemed, because my line was, you couldn't do a job for our cat. The milkman's been doing your bloody job for years. Now, talking of Barry Foster, who was a brilliant actor, and I was with him in a play with Michael Caine, and this was Don't Let Summer Come at the Criterion Theatre, which won the Evening Standard Award for the best play. Stanley Baker came to see the show, and he wanted to see Michael Caine to see if it was possible that he could give him a part in Zulu. So I had a little lucky mouse. And Michael came into my dressing room and he said, look, I've got this interview with Stanley Baker. Can I borrow your lucky mouse? And I said, yes, of course you can. So he goes off. It was a little furry mouse and it had cheese in its paws and it had whiskers and a very long tail as it was a bookmark and very nice fur. So he was then asked to go back again and to do a film test. So he comes into my dressing room again. This was at the Criterion Theatre. And he says, look, can I borrow the mouse again? He said, I've got a thing about it now. And I said, yes, of course you can. So off he goes with the mouse and he gets the part in Zulu. So here's the cruncher. We, in Next Time I Sing to You, thought that we were going to New York, because it happened that we didn't, because the American Equity decided they wanted an American cast. But that's what the situation was. And Michael comes into my dressing room and he got the part and they were going to South Africa. And he said, can I borrow your lucky mouse and take it to South Africa? And I said, no, you can't. Of course you can't. It's my lucky mouse. And he said, well, I've got this thing and it's the biggest opportunity I've ever had in my career. And I just believe that the mouse would bring me luck. So I very reluctantly gave him the mouse to borrow because I knew that we were going to America. But the what's it hit the fan for me as soon as he took the mouse out of the country. The play didn't continue, and I just thought, well, this is the end of what could have been a promising career. Well, he comes back to the country having been away for something like 3 months, and we had the same agent. So I would be phoning up saying, look, can you ask Michael Caine to give me my mouse back, please? And then they'd be no mouse, and I'd phone the secretary, and she said, well, I've asked him. And I said, well, you know, it's not right. And I'd phone again, and I said, look, I'm thinking of going to litigation. Because he wouldn't give me my mouse. And then Zulu had its premiere, and they were very extravagant premieres in those days, and I had this sort of velvet crinoline thing, and I was sitting next to Michael Caine, and I said to him, where's my bloody mouse? And he said, it's in my pocket. And I said, well, give it to me. And he said, when the film's finished. So the film was shown and everybody applauded and he gave me back my mouse. Now, this is the mouse. Oh. And it's minus its cheese and its claws and its whiskers and half its tail. So, Michael Caine, next time you are giving credit, give credit to where it's due and tell them that it was all to do with my mouse, because not a lot of people know that. Now, I'd like to name drop, and the biggest name drop I can possibly do is Judy Garland. And those years ago, when she was over here to make a film, I was privileged to be asked out for just four of us to go out for dinner. And we went to a little nightclub. They had nightclubs in those days, not horrible dives, but, you know, where they'd have a little band or something. And when we arrived in there, everybody, of course, noticed Judy Garland, including the trio. And so the trio stopped what they were playing and they started playing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And when they finished, I said to her, that must be so touching for you. And she said, to be quite honest, darling, it's a bloody nightmare. Oh. But at least there are only three of them. So she nodded to them and sort of just signalled her hand and they played it again. And at the end of it, she turned around to me, looking as if she was smiling, and said, balls. I went to Hollywood. I made a film called Americanization of Emily, and it was with the wonderful Joyce Grenfell and the lovely Julie Andrews. And I then worked afterwards with Joyce on the Pure Hell of St Trillians. And that leads me on to Alistair Sim. Now, of all the people that I have admired, he, without doubt, is my favourite. And I was fortunate enough to be at the Garrick Theatre in Too True to Be Good, Bernard Shaw's play. And I would find myself on stage looking at Alistair Sim instead of looking at whoever was talking, because he would just be raising an eyebrow or giving a slight sneer, and he was fantastic. So he, of all the people, is the one that I've admired most. I've been in 7 West End plays. One that does stick out in my memory was at the Royal Court Theatre, Meals on Wheels, with Frank Thornton and Roy Kinnear, directed by John Osborne and written by Charles Wood. Well, who could refuse such a thing? And so we all got together at the theatre and introduced to John Osborne, and we were rehearsing in the room above. And John Osborne never said a word to us for 2 weeks. We'd come out and we'd say, what is it? You know, doesn't he like us? Is he fed up with us? Can't we do it? And we were mystified, the three of us. So we were opening the next Tuesday, and John Osborne said, I want you to keep the Saturday before we open free, because I'm going to take you somewhere. And we met outside the theatre, and we all bundled into a taxi, and we went to the London Palladium, where there was Ken Dodd doing his show. So we thought, oh, what a treat, you know, he likes us, he's taking us to see Ken Dodd. And we come out of the theatre, and he turned around to us and he said, that's how I want you all to act. And left. And we didn't know what he meant. Well, we'd never understood this play. We never understood it from the beginning to the end, because it was all full of non sequiturs. And we had the League of Friends, Friends of the Theatre, on the Monday night. And these were the friends, don't forget. And at the end of the play, they gave us a slow hand clap. And the curtain went up, and the curtain came down, and the curtain went up, and the curtain came down, and they were still going like this. And we're shouting into the wings, don't take the curtain up again, don't take the curtain up again. And Roy clung onto the curtain, and it went about 13 feet in the air and ripped. So he's in a huddle on the floor. Anyway, that was the night before we opened. But the night that we opened, it was dreadful, because every time the lights went down on the stage, you could see the audience walking out. So after the play, Anthony Page was the artistic director, and he comes into the dressing room and he said, oh, darling, he said, that was absolutely wonderful. It was wonderful. And I said, how can you say that? They were all walking out. And he said, my favourite line of all time, he said, yes, but their backs were electric. Now, in between plays and films and television, I've had hobbies. One of them's bridge, which I like very much indeed, and I'm reasonably good at it. And I also used to own racing greyhounds. I had 3. And there was one occasion when it was something like the Derby, the Greyhound Derby, and one of my dogs, Quinella Queen, was in it. And it was very close. And there was a photo finish, and we were peering at the photograph to see who'd actually won. And it was just about an inch of the two noses, and mine was second. And the breeder said, well, she would have won if she hadn't been bloody laughing. Now, this is a little bit more serious, but in 1978, I was in Cardiff and I had discovered a lump on my left breast. And I was told by the Cardiff Hospital, well, you live near the Marsden, your tour's finishing, I suggest you go to the Marsden next week. So I went to the Marsden and I had a test and I had a malignant tumour. And I said to the surgeon, what will happen if I don't have a mastectomy? And he said, well, we can cut out a lump, but it could then spread. So I said, I will take that risk. And I had a huge lump taken away. But unfortunately, I had it again in 1979. So I was obviously getting smaller and smaller on the left side, and I was still big on the right side. So I had constructive surgery. They were wonderful to me at the Marsden, and to sort of level me up. Well, I'm still a bit lopsided, but when I watch the television and see this cosmetic surgery and you hear all these people whinging about something just not being quite right, I think, what are they talking about? Because it doesn't matter. So anyway, I've been there, done that, and I'm still one of the only carry-on stars that's left. And I'm going to talk about those in a minute. After doing the carry-ons, my agent said, look, you're being typecast. I can't get you anything more serious because you're doing all these carry-on films. I don't want you to do them anymore. And there's a B picture. And he said, it's called The Painted Smile, and I'd like you to do it. And he said, you've got your name above the title just to give you experience in drama. So my very first day, this director, Lance Comfort, said to me, I know that you haven't done much in drama, but you have some mannerisms that I'd like you to be aware of. He said, I don't know if you realise, but you roll your eyes quite a lot. And I said, I didn't realise that. And he said, it's very easy. Just sort of try and keep them focused. He said, and your mouth, you wobble your mouth quite a lot. And he said, and try not to do your comedy walk. And I said, I didn't know I had a comedy walk. And he said, well, yes, you do. Well, I did this film, and then I went to see it with my agent in Wardour Street in a little sort of preview. And it starts with me putting on a stocking, and it comes out like this. Mark, Mark, I'm not going. And that's how I played the whole film. And we were stunned. And when we came out, my agent said to me, well, we won't do that again. And I said, no. But the funny thing is about that film, it just shows you how you can wipe things out of your memory. It was on the television about 6 months ago at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I thought, well, I'll record that and see this film because I hadn't seen it since. And I watched it and I thought, I can't remember how this film ends. Don't forget, I was in it. And at the end of this film, I'm running on a quarry chased by Kenneth Griffiths, and he shoots me 3 times, and I'm dead, and I'd forgotten that. Now, I can't tell jokes, but I can keep a straight face, and I learned that by working a lot with all our top comedians, Benny Hill, Tommy Cooper, Tony Hancock. But last week, I was interviewed by Jeremy Beadle at Sandown Races in front of all the punters, and he said, who were the funniest people that I'd ever worked with? And I said, offstage, without doubt, was Kenneth Williams, and probably on was Tony Hancock. And Jeremy said, they were both depressives, weren't they? And I said, well, I suppose so. They both committed suicide. So he was lost for words, but it did make the audience laugh, and that's the main thing, isn't it? Oh, that reminds me. I haven't told you about the 4 carry-on films. Never mind, you know what my memory's like, and I'll tell you next time.